Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Thanksgiving, post-Thanksgiving, and welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan, here on WGN. My guest for this entire hour is a man named Patrick Butler, who not only has he been a lifelong newspaper man, he is also in love with history. And that history shines through. I've not read all of his historical books. He has done The Hidden History of Ravenswood and Lakeview, The Hidden History of Uptown and Edgewater, both of those in 2013, and my new favorite book, The Hidden History of Lincoln Park. Patrick, how are you?
I'm outstanding.
He is outstanding. He's here with his great friend who may or may not talk, friend, neighbor, and copy editor. And I love copy editors, for those of you who don't know, are the people that make Patrick's words as a lifelong newspaper man and mine as a lifelong newspaper man make sense when you read them in print. Is that a good way to describe a copy editor?
That's a wonderful way. Oh, yes. And they are also moved up quickly along the line for canonization.
Yes. Yes. And yep. You should be the first. Yours here. How did the first – well, let's go back. You're a fifth-generation Chicagoan. Right. Where were you born and raised?
I was born on the north side of Chicago at Columbus Hospital back when it was –
bygone Columbus Hospital. I remember it.
And I was raised in Rogers Park and Edgewater and later Uptown. And so I got quite a good education.
With a good education, what made you go into the news business?
Well, let's put it this way. I was too poor to go to law school.
Mm-hmm.
I was too immoral to join the clergy. And I had a bad left eye, which kept me from becoming an army officer.
Yeah.
So what else does one do in a case like that? They become a newspaper man. And I haven't regretted it for a single moment.
You and I hazard to say, and my father, too, who's no longer around, were in the newspaper business when the newspaper business was not beleaguered by the internet, when everybody read. I got on a bus a few days ago going somewhere, and for some strange reason, I thought I took some like weird flashback and could remember days when everybody on the bus was reading a newspaper.
Right.
Remember those days?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
It was an important job, but it was also a romantic job. I mean, we went out, and there was no Twitter, there was no Instagram, there was no Facebook. We covered the news. There was a real joy to that, wasn't there?
There really was. As a matter of fact, my real baptism into this business was during the Martin Luther King riots. I was still in school at the time, wow. Columbia College, and I was doing a stringer work for the Lerner newspapers.
Mm-hmm. The Lerner chain, in its time, many of you listening may remember, the Lerner chain was a huge and important chain of newspapers here. I mean, they covered the neighborhoods in a way that the big dailies in 1968, there were four big daily newspapers,
right,
in a way they couldn't.
No, that's right. As a matter of fact, we were at one time the world's largest chain of community newspapers.
Is that right?
I had
forgotten that or never knew that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so my first assignment was to cover the Martin Luther King riots in Cabrini Green. And my first assignment of any substance. And at my second night there, because all of the action was really at night, not so much during
the
day.
No question.
I found myself crouched beside a squad car with another reporter and a cop with his squad car. And we're crouched on the side, and he's on the radio trying to get someone to take care of the sniper who was in the ninth floor.
Yeah.
And so in the meantime, we're crouched
And it you're a kid at this point. You're a young man.
Yes, yes. But as they say, I saw the elephant that
night. Yeah, you grow up fast.
I grew up fast. And actually, I was not in any real danger. The nearest round landed about, 8-9 feet away.
Well, and, see, but for someone I've been shot at, too, in various mm-hmm. stories, for sure. someone who's never been shot at, that's a pretty life-altering moment, don't you think?
It is. But, you know, Winston Churchill, who was also a newspaper reporter, when he covered the Boer War when he wasn't fighting it, and Winston Churchill said, "There is nothing more elating than to be shot at by an adversary without effect."
But this wasn't, though, the strange thing about that time is these were not really adversaries. Those guys in Cabrini were just, they were angry.
Of course.
And they were angry on the west side, and that's why they burned down a bunch of buildings.
Of course.
They were angry. They were not, they weren't angry at, a student at Columbia College.
No.
But
no.
So when did you get your first byline in the papers? Was that?
Actually, I got my first byline for writing a feature on the Olivet Community Center.
Yeah.
And that I got actually before night at Cabrini Green.
Yeah. And you determined while you were at Columbia that this is what you wanted to do,
yes.
right?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Well, Patrick, trying to tell me why. I'm trying to think back of why. My father was a newspaper man, and it was kind of a genetic pull for me. What was it that made you want to be a newspaper man?
Well, I knew I wasn't going to become president of the United States.
And you weren't going to be a priest.
And I wasn't going to be a priest.
Right.
So
the last thing, and I couldn't be a dentist, and I wasn't a very good dancer, and I couldn't be a professional singer. Yeah, you can toss out a bunch of stuff. But what it must have, the excitement of it.
I like the excitement.
Yeah.
I like being close to where the action is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I figured since I can't make history in the conventional sense of the word, I wanted to be close to it when it was happening and where it was happening. And I will say that I've had that opportunity on a couple occasions. I mean, I've met 3 presidents of the United States, 2 foreign presidents, a king, a queen, actually lots of queens, but we won't talk about
yes,
that.
Yes, because of the neighborhoods you would hang out in. Yes, indeed. Indeed. And you still write for...
Yes, I do.
For who?
I write for Inside Publications, which now owns what's left of the Lerner newspapers.
Wow.
And I write for the Gazette newspapers,
right.
which are on the near south side, and they go all the way down to Bridgeport.
You must – it's got to be 10, 20,000 bylines.
At least.
I don't think you've counted them, have you?
I have not.
Yeah, that's probably wise. You'd probably have a heart attack and keel over. You go, what? I covered all this? Did you have a specific beat or you had a neighborhood was your beat, right?
The neighborhood was my beat. And if I could come up with ideas that nobody else had thought of for the whole papers, I was welcome to do that too.
Wow.
They gave me
a lot of freedom.
A lot of freedom. At Lerner, they gave me a lot of freedom. Later on, when we were taken over by the Sun-Times, we had a little bit less freedom.
Sure.
But even today, I work for Inside. I have an incredible amount of freedom.
And what do you think, before we get into your books and your fascination, the shared fascination you have with me for history, what do you think about the changes in this business? Do you see my daughter, Fiona, who's 12, loves to write, and one day she asked me a question that I never have refused to answer any question. This one really stuck. I said, Fiona, do you ever think about what you want to do? I think when I was 12, I wanted to be a cowboy or a major league pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Dad, I do. I think maybe I want to be a writer, but I have to ask you a question. I said, what's that, honey? She said, do you think when I'm grown up and out of college that there will still be newspapers?
Mm-hmm.
And that's like 10 years.
Right.
And I bit my tongue and changed the subject. It's a tragedy of some sort, what's happened to print newspapers, yeah. Don't you think?
It is, but I really think 50 years from now, there will still be newspapers in one form or another. There are still going to be reporters out there. It may all be digital,
yeah.
Which has its advantages and disadvantages, but I don't think the news business as we know it is going to go down the tubes.
Because a really scary thought is a world, especially now, a world without journalism. It's impossible.
It'd be the new dark ages over again.
Well put.
Because we, in our profession, we keep, in countries where we're lucky enough to be able to do so, we keep the politicians in line. We have sometimes more power than the politicians, which is why we're called the Fourth Estate.
Right.
And we sometimes find out things which are actually of benefit.
No question.
To the powers that be.
No question. And some of the powers that be need the press, as they say, more than ever. I am playing the music of Bonnie Kolak from her wonderful CD, Here to Sing, because Bonnie Kolak was one of the bright lights at a place called the Earl of Old Town, which certainly plays a part in the latest book from my friend Patrick Butler, The Hidden History of Linkin Park. This is your third in this Hidden History series. First was Ravenswood and Lakeview, Uptown, and then Uptown and Edgewater, both in 2013. How did these books come to be? Did someone approach you to write them, Patrick, or did you
I
need to do this?
I approached them.
Okay.
You know, after spending about 25 years or more working for Northside newspapers,
sure.
I had a lot of background information, and I kind of figured I'm going to write a book on the history of the Northside and call it Northside Story.
Oh, nice.
Well, what happened was I went to did the logical thing. I went to the book fair.
Sure.
I saw, you know, history books, and they had a spread of books about local history.
Oh, yeah.
And I went up to the publisher's representative there, and I said, how would you like a book on the history of Chicago's North Side? And
he said, that's too big for us, in essence.
Well, what he said was, send me an outline and some samples, which I did the following day. And then he said, you may not be interested in doing this, but we're not going to do the entire North Side. But would you be interested in doing
various neighborhoods.
Of various neighborhoods? And I said, fine and dandy.
Oh, no kidding. That's perfect. It's right up your... right up your alley, as they say.
Exactly.
So why did you – Ravenswood and Lakeview first – was it arbitrary? Which one?
It was arbitrary because Ravenswood and Lakeview was the area that I had covered a lot of for the Lerner newspaper.
Yeah, sure.
And then, of course, after that was Edgewater and Uptown.
Yeah.
Which also has a really fascinating history.
Well, look, you know this as well as I do. I mean – that's one of the things that I think people tend to forget is that the history of any neighborhood informs the present day of that neighborhood. And without knowing the history of a place, you don't have a clue. You know, I love people go, I think I may move to Uptown or anywhere. And I'll say, well, you should look into the history of these places. It will enrich
yes.
your experience. And obviously, as a fifth-generation Chicagoan, history has always been important to you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But don't you think that's true, too? And your book, I haven't read the first two, but I've read Hidden History of Linkin Park because that's like my neighborhood. That's where I grew up. And I discovered things in there that warmed, well, some that freaked me out, frankly, the Curly Court, and we'll talk about that. but others that really enlightened me, and that's the whole point of this. And you do it, Patrick, I must tell you, Patrick Butler, in these wonderful short chapters that read very much to me like snappy news stories. Mm-hmm. That had to be your intent.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. See, I had shopped it to another publisher.
Oh, yeah.
Which I will not name.
Sure.
Because they reacted the way they should have reacted. They were sort of an academic publisher, and my books are anything but academic.
No.
And so my stuff was really too proletarian for them.
Well, actually, I'd call it too readable. Probably too readable for them. Ladies and gentlemen, when you do order these, where, how do people order these? Can they just go?
Well, there are several ways you can do it. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can get it at the Chicago.
You get it at Amazon.com,
you
too.
Can get it on Amazon.com. Yeah. You can get it at the Chicago History Museum. You can get it at the Newberry Library.
Oh, and
or, as a matter of fact, you could even order it through me.
Hey, that's another thing. You do. You go out. Part of your other life is going out and giving talks.
Yes.
About these various neighborhoods at libraries and at various organizations. Okay, I'm going to ask you to give me your email, and Elif will put it on the website if you want to do it.
I want to do it.
You want to hear from these?
I want to, yes.
People I don't know who listens to the show, but okay. A lot of them do. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, that would be Pat Butler.
Pat Butler.
1940 at yahoo.com.
Pat Butler. I'm writing this down, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I'm. Pat Butler, 1940 at yahoo.com.
Mm-hmm.
Order the book directly from Pat, and then he will autograph them for you.
Yes, I will.
I'm making that promise because that's what I would do if I had the book.
Of course. Of course.
The Hidden History of Ravenswood and Lakeview, The Hidden History of Uptown and Edgewater. And The Hidden History of Lincoln Park. The Lincoln Park book covers a big slice of Chicago because Lincoln Park is Old Town. Mm-hmm. My stomping ground as a youth is part of Lincoln Park.
Mm-hmm.
When you research, I know, Patrick, being a newspaper man in all of these places for such a long time, you know a lot of things about them.
Right.
But there nevertheless in your research must have been a lot of surprises.
There were. I was surprised, for example, at the amount of, for those who are interested in the supernatural, the amount of hauntings that have taken place in the Lincoln Park area.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I became interested in that aspect of it because my family, back during the 1918 epidemic, the flu epidemic.
Sure.
Lived right across from St. Vincent's Church.
Oh, yeah.
And in the space of a week, three members of the family died.
Ugh.
But it didn't end there. Pictures started falling.
Oh, no. So they died, but they still hung
they
around.
They still stuck around.
Well, and I am a long time and huge fan of the place called the Red Lion Pub on Lincoln Avenue.
Yes.
The old one and the spanking, unbelievably nice new one. Now, that place is totally haunted, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. As a matter of fact, the house that our family lived in that, you know, was haunted with
these three dead
someone
people.
Someone once, I didn't get a chance to take them up on it, but somebody on another station was talking about that house back in the late 60s and dared anybody to spend the night in that house.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. And I tried to, you know, get through to the program because I would have been more than happy because after all, these were my cousins.
These are your relatives.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? You'd spend time in that house.
Yeah, of course.
I am talking to Patrick Butler, a long time newspaper man, as am I, but also he is the author of three fine books that are enlightening and surprising. And if you live in these neighborhoods, you certainly should have them. The Hidden History of Ravenswood and Lakeview, The Hidden History of Uptown and Edgewater, and The Hidden History of Lincoln Park, which we have just touched upon by talking about the Red Lion Pub and we will get into in-depth in the second hour. You got a commercial, then you're going to get some news, and then it's Butler and Kogan taking a look. I'm surprised some of my misdeeds aren't mentioned in these books, but we do have that mutual character in the infamous Patty Bowler.
Oh, yes.
Yes, one of the legendary politicians of all time. So we get a commercial. No commercial. Oh, look, Ella, thank you. You know what I want you to do? I want you to write this down then. Pat Butler, 1940, at yahoo.com. This is now a commercial, an impromptu, spontaneous commercial for Pat Butler. That's the best place. You can get his books at Barnes & Noble. You can get them at bookstores. But you can get them autographed by Pat. Or you can make arrangements to have him come and speak to one of your groups.
Oh, yes.
Because this covers the waterfront. And there are a lot of people at not just at nursing homes, but at libraries and bars. You should do an event at the Red Lion. I'm telling you right now. Elif has now become best friends with Colin Cordwell, the owner of the Red Lion Pub, for a story she's working on. So Pat and I, after the news, will continue on and specifically focus on Lincoln Park, Crilly Court, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. More has happened in this Lincoln Park book than has happened in most parts of Chicago. So please, please stay tuned. That's Bonnie Kolak from her great, great CD, Here to Sing. She is one of the many, 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 many bright lights who played Bygone Club, called the Earl of Old Town, which is featured one of the many places, one of the dozens, if not hundreds of places featured in Patrick Butler's fine, interesting, compelling, engaging, entertaining new book, Hidden History of Lincoln Park. It's copy edited by Kathy Hills, who is also in the studio, and she is, as all copy editors do, made it better than it deserved to be. So I have with every story or book I've ever written. Let's just bop around here. What a lot of people, you know, it stuns me, Patrick, that a lot of people do not know what Lincoln Park itself was originally built to be. I'm stunned by that.
A cemetery.
Yes.
Yes.
And it was. It was built to be, and it was a cemetery.
Right. Actually, it was three cemeteries. You had, part of it was a Catholic cemetery, part of it was a pauper's cemetery, and part of it was for, you know, the rest of the population.
Yeah.
And one of the people there who's still buried there.
I know.
Kennison.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the place that ever mystified me, I grew up three blocks from the park itself, a wonderful place to grow up in the heart of Old Town. The couch mausoleum there, we used to, with some consistency, try to break into that place.
You too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
it must have been a generational thing. Something had to be in there. Nobody knew what it was. It's right in front, basically in front of the Chicago, what I used to call the Chicago Historical Society. Who's in there? What's in there?
Yeah. Interestingly enough, they're not sure how many people are buried in Couch's tomb. It could be Couch and his wife, or it could be as many as nine people buried there.
And it's still there because?
There was a court hearing when they tried to move the couches when the cemetery ceased to be a cemetery.
Sure.
They tried to move the couches, and the family entered an injunction against it. And the court hearings dragged on so long. Basically, it was a stalemate, but they decided 20, 25 years later, it just wasn't worth the battle.
Now, that, to my mind, is one of the great Chicago mystery. That's you have divulged the hidden. That's the hidden history of it. But it just it's another great thing where nobody asks. You know what I mean?
True confession time and the statute of
you
limitations.
You did break in there?
Tried to.
Well, so did I. I tried like every week.
Guess who I tried to? With a group of guys.
Yeah, it was always.
And one or two ladies, including the great-grandniece of Mary Todd Lincoln.
Oh, come on.
Yes. I dated her for 3 years.
You did?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. But you never got in either, did you?
No.
You didn't get in either. But you must think that it's general. I don't know if anybody's trying to get in now, because when I was a kid,
it was a rite of passage.
It was totally overgrown, so you didn't think anything of it. And,
right.
Yeah. Another interesting chapter in your book is about Joey Lewis.
Oh, yes.
Talk about that.
Joey Lewis had originally started out as a singer.
Yeah, and a good singer.
A very good singer. He had a great future ahead of him. He was singing at a nightclub near Clark and Diversey, and he had received an offer to go to another club in Uptown, actually.
Right.
And the pay was about twice as much as what he was getting before. So he did the logical thing. He made the move. And the guy that owned the club he was working at was connected.
Sure.
And he said, "You'll never sing in another place."
He made sure of that.
He made sure of that. Joey Lewis was staying at the Commonwealth Hotel, which is now
at Pine Grove, and it's
at Pine Grove and Diversey.
Yeah.
It's now affordable housing for seniors and others. It's a very nice place, actually.
Oh, I know the building well.
Yeah. And so they paid him a visit one evening, slit his throat from ear to ear.
Cut his vocal cords, right?
Cut his vocal cords. He staggered to Columbus Hospital.
Where you were born.
Where I was born, and where he almost died, but didn't. After years, several years of hard therapy, and, you know, he was able to
talk
not
again.
Sing, but he was able to talk.
And he became a pretty notable comedian.
That's right.
And sort of Don Rickles-like kind of, right? He was you'd think after having your throat cut, you wouldn't have the world's best, kindest sense of humor or disposition. That's a great story in here.
And there's a movie that came out years later, The Joker
Was
Wild.
The Joker's Wild with Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
Frank Sinatra and Mitzi Gaynor. So if you get to see The Joker's Wild, you'll figure out what that's all about. You can't talk about this whole area without, and one of the, I'll tell you now, you do a great job on the, what transpired at 2122 North Clark Street on a certain Valentine's Day many years ago.
Uh-huh.
You all know, and most people know, there was a St. Valentine's Day massacre, but you get into, and I'm so glad you did, because I thought I was the only guy who knew him, this Canadian promoter named George Patey. Who is this is what I mean by hidden history. Who's this joker?
This was a promoter. He was one of these people that was always looking for an opportunity to, 100 years earlier, he'd have been a snake oil salesman. You know, but
no question.
Yeah, but so he bought, when they tore down the building, he bought and numbered all of the bricks.
Yeah, yeah.
And moved them to a nightclub.
This story is so good.
Up in Canada.
In Canada,
yeah.
And advertised it as, he put it first. Was it in the bathroom?
It was in the bathroom.
That's
the
right.
The wall
of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre was in. So if you, it was like have a drink and then pee near where the St. Valentine's.
It was like you were part of the firing party.
Oh, my God. That guy was nuts. And he eventually, I know that he, that place failed, and he eventually tried to sell off the bricks one by one. Mm-hmm. And that didn't. That didn't wind up being paid off. Now, that's a place. You talked earlier about ghosts and things. I have heard and written about it, frankly, that many people think when they're walking down that stretch of Clark Street just south of Webster,
right,
that dogs will start barking and for no reason at all. Do you think that you heard that too?
I've heard that, and I've heard that, and I've talked to people who will swear that they heard moans and other noises of the night,
wow,
coming from there. And my first question, when I talked to this one guy, and he was talking about hearing moans as he walked by there, and it was on a hot summer night, I said, are you sure these are ghosts, or are you sure it isn't something else? And he swore it was ghosts, and, you know, stranger things have happened.
Well, if there's a leitmotif to your book, The Hidden History of Lincoln Park, it is that the past is present.
If yes,
it's present in buildings. It's present in historical things that took place at buildings, but it's also present in these spirits. Let's say
who haven't quite left. And interestingly enough, this whole business of ghosts. You are familiar with Richard Crow,
sure,
the ghost hunter.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Richard Crow, you know, he originally started out studying to become a priest.
I do know that.
And he got interested in ghosts partly because of his interest, you know, in the priesthood.
Yeah, in the spiritual world.
In the spiritual world. And he got kicked out of Mundelein because he had shown too much interest in the afterlife.
I remember him doing some of his first visits to the Billy Goat many years ago.
Yeah.
Richard Crow was something. You're going to hear a song, and we're going to talk some more to Patrick Butler. Again, you can get him at patbutler1940@yahoo.com. You can get his books there. You can read more about, you can, you know, communicate with him, and he's no spirit. We'll be right back. Bonnie Kolak would sing in a second, but I have another song for you to listen to. This is a song but written and performed by a guy who is also in Pat Butler's Hidden History of Lincoln Park. Ready for this, Pat? You've heard this before, but it's not played, you know, it's not in the rotation on your music stations in Chicago. Here's when Strachey singing 43rd Ward.
Yes.
First you head north till you get to the park. Then you go a few blocks west of Clark. When you start feeling better, you can thank the Lord that you're back home in the 43rd Ward. In the 43rd Ward. In the 43rd Ward. Oh, I'm feeling great, and I thank the Lord that I'm back home in the 43rd Ward. At the Moody Church, they shout and sing of the city four square where the joy bells ring. But go to North and Sedgwick on a Saturday night, there's not a single square in sight. In the 43rd Ward, in the 43rd Ward. Oh, I'm feeling great, and I thank the Lord that I'm back home in the 43rd Ward. Now, no one gives a damn what you say or where, how you make your living or part your hair. You can even grow a beard, we don't care, cause this is the home of laissez-faire. In the 43rd Ward, in the 43rd Ward. Oh, I'm feeling great, and I thank the Lord that I'm back home in the 43rd Ward. In 1919, we went bone dry, and the Deutsche beer drinkers all started to cry. But they dried their tears because the news somehow never got through to Willow and Howe. In the 43rd Ward, in the 43rd Ward. Oh, I'm feeling great, and I thank the Lord that I'm back home in the 43rd Ward.
Now the urban renewal boys got a surprise when Patty saw the dollar signs in their eyes. He said, don't go messing with our houses and grass. I'm telling you straight, you can never pass in the 43rd Ward. In the 43rd Ward. Oh, I'm feeling great, and I thank the Lord that I'm back home in the 43rd Ward. If I get to heaven, though there's not much chance, I'll watch them play their harps and sing and dance. And I may stick around for my reward, if it's anything like the 43rd Ward. In the 43rd Ward, in the 43rd Ward. Oh, I'm feeling great, and I thank the Lord that I'm back home in the 43rd Ward.
I'm sorry you couldn't hear Pat Butler laughing throughout the whole song. But there he goes. There he goes. It's nice to hear that again, isn't it? Pat is quite taken with that song. It's a great song, and Win Strachey is another person who... You know, he's kind of one of these people, Pat, and I'm sure you've encountered this a lot in doing your three books about the history of Chicago's neighborhoods, that people are forgotten. Win Strachey was a huge deal here for
such yes.
He was one of the founders of the Old Town School when it was on North Avenue.
And he was one of the guys that really gave a shot in the arm to the whole folk music trend in the 1960s.
No question.
And incidentally... This is one of my two favorite Win Strachey songs. The other, I don't know if you're familiar with it, John Harrison.
Yeah, sure. Win was he used to spend time on my parents' back porch singing and playing the guitar, and it was one of my great memories. Another guy, I got 5 minutes left with you, but people don't know that Johnny Weissmuller, the most famous Tarzan ever, was a child of the Lincoln Park neighborhood.
He was
right?
an altar boy at St. Michael's Church.
In Michael's, half a block from Twin Anchors. Yeah,
right. Yeah.
Where did he learn to swim?
Where did he learn to
swim? Yeah. I mean, there were probably there were not Olympic-sized pools. He was in the lake.
No, there wasn't. He worked at one of the pools in high school. He worked at one of the pools... the men's club pools, the Chicago Club, or something like that.
Yeah. And he and his brother were at Oak Street Beach. That's another one of these things. It's got to be. You got another book? You must be. I mean, you seem to have had, and you can tell from reading it, so much fun writing this. And
yes,
that's,
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And it's so much fun writing the other two.
Sure.
And I'm trying to convince... our illustrious publisher, that blessings and peace be upon them, that
maybe you could have been a priest.
I don't think so. Okay. We really need a Rogers Park book.
Yeah.
Because there's so much about Rogers Park.
That's a big book. Yeah. I mean, that is West Rogers Park, East Rogers Park.
It really is.
Fascinating.
And as a matter of fact, you know that the sailor boy on the Cracker Jack box was a Rogers Park kid.
I thought you were going to say it was you.
No.
He was a Rogers Park
kid. He was a Rogers Park kid. He is buried in the cemetery next to what used to be Angel Guardian Orphanage.
Yeah, sure. I know that. I know exactly where that is.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Talking about your Uptown book, I mean, you must love a place like Graceland.
Oh, I give tours at Graceland.
You do?
As president of the Ravenswood Lakeview Historical Association, I give tours maybe two or three times a year.
Wow.
At Graceland Cemetery.
That is one of the great...
It is.
Like an outdoor... It's an outdoor history lesson, it's an outdoor museum, and it's like an outdoor art gallery, too, with some of the, you know, the Burnham Island in there is one of the most astonishing things in all of Chicago.
Yes.
Pat, you have lived for a newspaper guy, you're pretty smart, and you're a very, very good writer, and I'm glad you have your friend, Kathy Hills, reading your handwriting, or trying. Is it trying, Kathy?
It's very trying.
Trying to read your handwriting. You can get all the information. You can contact Pat at at patbutler1940@yahoo.com. When you wander through the city and when you two sort of drive home, you must see things that just remind you of what an amazing place you two have chosen to live.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
We wander.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
As a matter of fact, my daughter, when she was in high school and college, she was still living at home, and she and I would dedicate Friday nights as our night, and we'd wander all over the North Side.
Just randomly.
Just randomly.
Let's take a left here. Yeah. Let's take a right here.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that enriches, you know, that's what living in a city is all about. It's not just...
Yeah,
you know, visiting the same old places all the time.
No, but she was an urban explorer also.
What does she do for a living?
She teaches at Marist High School on
really?
The South
yeah,
Side.
Sure, yeah, sure. A teacher.
Yeah.
That's a nice.
Yeah.
That's a nice profession. Did she ever have? Did she ever, at any point, was she ever tempted to get into the so-called family business?
No, but she was tempted. Well, one of the family businesses. She was, at one point, thinking of going into politics in one form or another. And her plan was to become a lawyer and then get into politics. And she would have been very good at it, I think.
Well, you have a politician, Alderman Michelle Smith of the 43rd Ward. She's no Patty Baller, but she's a nice person. She wrote the introduction to Pat's Hidden History of Lincoln Park. Well, I can't wait to read the other books, and I can't wait to have you back on the show and talk about them. And you too, Kathy, are invited to come by. In the minute we have left, do you remember, can you recall, what was the most shocking thing you discovered in all of your research? Was there one thing, or is it a series of surprises?
I think it was a series of surprises, because after a while,
when
I
your
don't
newspaper
say...
man, look, you were shot at when you were a kid at Cabrini Green, so right. What exactly could shock you now, right?
Not too much. As a matter of fact, I'm probably the only guy that you know who has sat in the electric chair at Cook County, and is still here to talk about it.
You escaped.
Well, no. What happened?
Like terrible Tommy O'Connor, right?
Exactly.
You escaped from the electric chair.
No, what happened was at Columbia College, I took a criminology course, and part of the course involved visiting the county jail when Warden Jack Johnson was running the thing.
Sure.
And so in those days, they were still doing executions there. At one point during the visit, we had lunch with a couple guys on death row, and then they took us into where they kept the chair.
Yeah. Just have a seat.
Right. The guard captain who was leading us on that part of the tour asked if there was anyone here who thought he had enough guts to sit in this chair.
Duh. Well, and who would?
What happened was, well, it wasn't entirely voluntary. One of my so-called friends pushed me forward. Before I could say or do anything, two guards grabbed me by the arms and legs, strapped me in the chair, take off my glasses, put the hood on, and the guard captain starts reading the sentence.
Well, I am glad you are here to tell about surviving the electric chair. Patrick Butler.
I got a real charge out of it.
Yeah. How long have you been working on that one? Pat Butler, 1940@yahoo.com. Coming up, musician Johnny Bash.